Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay in the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome back to your favorite day of the week. I'm Anthony Irwin. Oh, shoot. Today isn't your favorite day of the week. It's Thursday. Back in college.
I like Thursdays.
Back in college, Thursday was my favorite day of the week. Like, Friday was just a weekend. Like, it was just, back in college, Friday was just like an extension of Saturday. I had two Saturdays and then a Sunday and then a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
At UCLA back in the day, and I would imagine this is the case at a lot of colleges/universities, Thursday was the big day. Thursday was the big house party day.
Thirsty Thursdays was
it
a big
It sounds like
deal.
You've already gotten started. But do you know why? Do you know why?
I've started already? No.
Yes, that I do know. COVID and the Lakers. I know why you started drinking early and our show, theoretically.
Yeah.
Or at least that's the excuse you're going to use.
Mm-hmm.
Jen, I swear it's for work. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But do you know why on college campuses, Thursday night is the big like house party, frat party, whatever party going out night?
Why it was?
Yeah.
I do not know.
Okay, the answer to that.
Does it have something to do with classes?
No, the answer to that, at least as I understand it, or at least at UCLA and I assume elsewhere, it was like this at Cal too, because that prevents the high school kids from being able to crash.
Oh.
It's much harder for them to, you know, if they're living at home, get out and come and hang out and do whatever.
Yeah.
On a Thursday, because you got to be up for school in the morning, for high school in the morning. But on a college campus,
Yeah.
Friday, meh.
Did you ever schedule classes for yourself on Fridays?
Not when I had a choice.
What was your major?
I was a business econ major.
You were one of those guys.
Yeah.
I have a fun business major story that made me change out of being a business major. I was a class. This will take a second. I was in class, and
let it breathe. It can take 2 seconds. Let it breathe.
All right. So I was in class, and this professor listed one book for what we needed, and then it turned out that we needed an updated version of that book. Actually, for that class, right?
All right?
And so, like, books cost like a shit ton of money back in college, and everybody kind of groaned. And, you know, for me, I was kind of lucky. My folks really helped me out during college. So I just went out and got the book. And there was this single mom who couldn't get the book because it was too expensive and she had just planned on, well, how was she going to do it? She didn't get the first book even. So she didn't have a book for the class. And she thought, well, I'm not going to have a book. And I'm now going to be like way, way behind. Mm-hmm. And I now had two books. And I looked at the two versions. And there was only like one change. That was the most annoying thing in college. It's like they would change the color of the font. And then that would be an updated version of the fucking book. Yeah.
Right.
So we would.
Such a scam. You have to buy a book for $200 and sell it back for $30, and right. they're going to sell it again for $100.
For $130, yeah. So I now had two books that were basically the same. This girl had no books, and I just said, well, fine, you can have my old one. Like, you can have the one that I originally brought for this class. I'll just jot down the note that is different in the page or whatever, and here you go. And I had, because it was a weighted class, right? And so I had people angry at me, like, oh my God, dude, that this is going to be, like, why would you give her the book? She was going to bring down the curve. Like, that would mean that it would be that much easier. And I was like, man, you guys, wow. And it was like, people got angry at me for giving her the book. So I finished that class. I think she did pretty good in the class. And then I was it. I got out of being a business major. I was like, I don't want anything that ever makes me think like that.
So, yeah. When you started to tell the story, you're like, how is she going to get the book? I got concerned how you were like, what, where you were going with that. I was like, this no. is before OnlyFans. What is he? Is that before? What is that? What he's saying? I don't, this no, is concerning
I,
me.
No, she, I, no. Cause she, I don't know why she showed up without the book in the first place. That was.
Yeah. I don't know how, what you're, how you're expecting this to go without, yeah. without the like right. primary materials.
Now, like so I did used to wait until like the first week of class to buy some books, depending on like how necessary it seemed like the book was going to be, you know, just based on like how thorough the professor's notes were going to be and all that. Like there were right. some classes that I would just kind of, well, I'll see if I can get by without it. This one was not one of those. It was like a thick ass. It was like a, I forget. It was like some econ class, and it was a thick ass book that we needed to buy. And so I don't know how she thought it was going to go when she showed up without getting it. But you know,
I mean, it worked out, I guess.
Yeah. For shouts to her. I hope she's.
Do we know her name?
No, I don't remember, dude. This was shit. Like 10 years ago now. This okay. was a long time ago. So I don't remember. But yeah, so yeah, that's my college story. I used to enjoy Thirsty Thursdays though. That was like the night that you go out, and I also used to like having class on Friday because the campus was empty. Yeah, it was empty. Parking at Cal State Fullerton was terrible. I don't know if it's improved ever since, but it used to be awful, and it was nice to show up on Friday. And just get a nice spot right in the front. I only had like one or two classes. I would go there, play some basketball, and then restart my weekend because it had already started the night before.
I never went to class.
Yeah. Well, that's where I ended up in college.
And I would do it to myself. I was like self-sabotaging in those days.
Yep.
And I would do it to myself. I would schedule classes for when the best pickup runs were.
Yeah.
At the Wooden Center.
Yeah.
And so I would just like, all right, I'm going to go to class, and I would just happen to bring my stuff to hoop.
Yeah.
And then I would walk by. So the Wooden Center is the, you know, like the student gym at UCLA. Mm-hmm. And I would just happen to have my stuff with me just yeah. in case. And I would kind of wander by and I go, oh,
how's it looking?
Man, ooh, dang, shockingly, it looks like they're playing pickup. Nah, maybe I'll play.
Yeah. Right.
You should probably be in class right now. Yeah, you're probably right.
Right.
I'm going to hoop.
Yeah, that's that. I mean, I at least hooping, I was getting exercise. Like if I skipped class for playing basketball, I felt better about myself than if I slept through class because I was super hungover from the night before.
Well, you know what's funny? As much as I drink now, and here we are doing the show, and as much of, strangely enough, at Laker games and maybe on my Instagram, less so on Twitter, how much of my brand is that I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
I didn't drink in college. Interestingly
really?
Enough. Yeah. That's a little tidbit for all of the Hook listeners out there. I'm certainly making up for it. Lost I time very at much this did. Point.
Yeah.
I didn't start drinking until I was like 23, I think 24 maybe.
Yeah, I was warming up. I was warming up like that.
I'm warming up presently. Let's go to the righty. And Anthony Irwin called down to the bullpen. And
I was limbering up my liver for what would eventually become my life.
I am sipping on some Cinquero right now, limbering up my liver for tonight's festivities at the last game at Staples Center. Shout out to Staples Center.
Wild. What? So you're drinking tequila? I was gonna ask. I poured this on like this was gonna actually start the show.
What is that? A white Russian? What do you got?
No,
there?
It's a eggnog. Do you like eggnog? Oh
no, eggnog is disgusting.
So this is the thing.
We need to do this. All right, this is Christmas season. We need to do this.
Yeah,
eggnog is disgusting.
Like, have you ever noticed that it like eggnog is one of those things? I think pickles are like this, and I think raw tomatoes are like this, where there is no apathy to the thing.
Yeah, right. There's no middle ground.
Right. You either hate it or you love it. And I hate tomatoes, love pickles, love eggnog. Love eggnog. Look forward to it every year. And then I'm the only person, though, that I know who loves eggnog. So
eggnog is hideous.
What is it about eggnog that you don't like?
I generally don't like sweet stuff very much.
You find this sweet?
And eggnog, like, I also like cream-based beverages, like thick beverages do not do it for me. I also, like, eggnog is only vaguely reminiscent of eggs and mayonnaise, but I despise both eggs and mayonnaise, and it is, like, vaguely reminiscent of those. Yeah, I just, no. It is just, like,
hate eggs? You're a cook, dude. You're a private chef.
I cook with them.
Everybody eats eggs.
No. Well, so I'll eat eggs if it's like mixed into something in a batter or whatever, but not in fried rice. If there's little pieces of it, no fried eggs, no egg salad, no sandwiches with any. No, thank you.
That's weird.
No fried egg on a burger, Fat Burger, none of that.
I was watching MasterChef last night, and the challenge, one of the pressure challenges was a scrambled egg.
Do you know why that is?
And some girl, yeah, because like Gordon Ramsay apparently is like famous for his scrambled eggs.
But, that's part of it, but the reason why, go ahead.
This girl had never scrambled an egg before. That was my very first thing I had ever cooked.
Okay, so key to a scrambled egg for everybody out there.
Okay.
Use a lot of butter and milk or cream, much more than you think you need. And scramble it up, but let it set a little bit before you start moving it, and then move it slowly, kind of drag from the outside in so that the uncooked parts will flow to the outside. But the real key is take the scrambled egg, take it off the heat before it's done, because it's going to continue to cook
a little bit.
And if you wait until it's actually done in the pan, it's going to be dry and overcooked. So don't do that. And the reason why they do that on those shows is it's a French chef thing. But what all these like very hoity-toity, annoying French chefs do, the way that they assess their underlings is cooking eggs. Because eggs are, they seem very simple, but to get them right, they're very difficult to cook. Whether it's soft-boiled, hard-boiled, pretty easy. But soft-boiled, scrambled, fried, etc., over-easy, it is the way that like these old French chefs test all their underlings because eggs, they seem very simple, but they are it's very precise and very difficult to get right.
Did you ever watch Jiro, The Art of Sushi?
No, but I should. What is it on?
It's, I think it's on Amazon. Last I checked, it was on Amazon. It started on Netflix, and that's when I first watched it a few years ago. But yeah, like to your point, they're sous chefs, like all of the chefs who ever served sushi at this restaurant had to perfectly cook an egg roll, like get it perfectly layered and all this stuff. And yeah, so I didn't know that it was this rite of passage.
That's the thing. Yeah, that is for all these, the hoity-toity French chefs, that's the thing. And this has been...
Seems pretty eccentric, in my opinion.
This has been your NBA basketball, alcohol, eggnog.
Look, man,
is disgusting.
This shit is so depraved. Like, literally, right before we started
I literally had to refill as we were just talking about prepping the show before we started.
12 minutes in, because, look, today's show, we're going to talk about the... Like, literally, right before we started recording, Shams Charania reported that the NBA and NBPA are in talks on shortened quarantines for players who test positive.
Test positive for
COVID-19, and then Sides are discussing allowing players to return faster, as soon as 6 days, based on testing cycle threshold.
And also, what day was it? A couple days ago. Today's Thursday. I want to say, I don't think it was yesterday. It was either yesterday, Wednesday, as we record this, or Tuesday, Adam Silver went on with Malika on, it's not called The Jump anymore, whatever they
ESPN
calls.
NBA Today?
I think that might be right. Although that's the NFL Today, or no, it's NFL Live. Maybe it is NBA Today. Mm. And kind of alluded to one of the changes in the protocols that they were considering was shortening the length that asymptomatic players needed to be out without testing out specifically because with this, as he called it, the Omicron, which he called the dominant variant, which seems to be the case, certainly, statistically in the NBA, based on their sequencing, and most likely in the rest of the country and probably the world, seems to, at this point, after exposure, you get it faster, but it also seems to, you also seem to be able to get rid of it faster than some of than Delta and the OG. So I will say, like, look, this is all very fluid, but kind of, I think the NBA is trying to do the best they can in a very fluid situation to do best practices, but also be fluid in changing protocols with new variants and new ways to fight infection. And so it seems like Omicron is more contagious, but shorter duration and also less damaging at this point. And so therefore it seems like that is a way that we can get back to normalcy, because this ain't going nowhere.
Yeah. So like that sentiment, this isn't going anywhere.
It ain't going nowhere.
I agree scientifically. Like, we have reached the point now where it is not going anywhere, but man, this really reminds me of the conversations around climate change. Like, there's something we could technically do, and there's something we technically could have done a while back to make it so that we don't have to deal with this forever. But now it just sucks, and we just got to live with it. Like, it's just
sure,
it's
just, sure.
It's so, like, frustrating how much those things have in common. Sure. Yeah,
My mom listens to this, so I use this phrase I'm going to use in relation to something else, which I'm not going to talk about right now because mom is going to listen to this. Also, she's heard me say this all over and over. I wish the world was different, but it's not. And so I don't think we should stop reaching for or fighting for what it should be or what we hope it should be or could be. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, we also have to deal with reality on reality's terms.
Yeah.
And the reality is everyone is not going to do what is necessary 100% of the time to actually eradicate this. So it is going to be around forever.
Yeah.
And
to be clear, like, this isn't like the NBA changing their protocols isn't what I have in mind of like what we could do to avoid this. Like, the NBA, look, the NBA has a whole bunch of, it's a superstar league, and there's a whole bunch of superstars right now who aren't going to be playing on Christmas, and the NBA can't have that. And they, you know, the focus right now is getting guys and keeping guys available as safely as possible. Like, that's, but I think the availability is I think, taking precedent over the safety, based on some of these protocols. And you know what? Like, I mean, that's on them. Like, if it's something that the union and the NBA as a league has agreed to, like, it's not really for me to say, like, no, you're doing it wrong. It's not my deal.
Yeah. I mean, look, we're all going to make mistakes with this, because at first it was, we don't know what this is. Now it's okay. Maybe we're okay. And now there's a new variant, and there's going to be spikes and lulls, valleys and spikes. So it's kind of a moving target for the NBA always. But like people in general, I guess like there's a few different options here, right? It could be the NBA is not going to shut the season down. Mm-hmm. They're not.
Right.
Is it possible that they could pause the season for a little bit? Yes. But I don't know what that does either. Right. Yeah. Because then we're assuming that the problem is these guys are getting it during games. They're spreading it during games on flights. The games thing, maybe, probably, I haven't really seen a lot of good data on that as of yet. But on the plains, it seems, you know, pretty likely. You know, a lot of our guys that don't play, you know, Michael Thompson, who is back tonight for the game. Billy Mack, who was out for a little bit, True has tweeted that he's currently still, talked to him this morning, still in protocols. So I don't know if it's fair if we say, all right, just shut it down for a couple weeks. Let's pause this for a couple weeks. I don't know what that necessarily does. And Adams, that interview I alluded to earlier, I mentioned earlier, he said, like, I don't know what the argument is for that, because that assumes that guys, if they're not playing, are just going to be like in a bunker at home and are not going to get it in the world, which yeah. doesn't seem like, I don't think that theory holds water. So pausing the season, I don't know really what that does.
No, I think all of these guys, at least the vast majority of these NBA players, have proven that they're actually a lot safer with their teams than whatever it is they'd be doing if there wasn't, if they, it, whatever it is they'd be doing if they weren't with their teams. You know, like we saw when the league was trying to come back, how many guys and how long it took for everybody to be safe for training camp. Like, that took a long ass time, and that was quite the hassle. And I think now, you know, you look, the other thing that we need to keep in mind here is it's a group of you know, it's a labor group who want to work, want to continue to make money, yes. and it's a younger, wealthy group. And typically, young, wealthy people have cared less and have to care a little bit less about COVID. Like, that's just the reality of the situation.
You're telling on yourself, huh?
Huh?
You're out here telling on yourself.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yes. I am neither young nor wealthy, but yes.
A wealthy, white, adjacent, in peak physical condition.
Like, I'm not Mayo, but I'm an aioli, you know?
There you go. You got a little spice to it, huh? Got a little spice to it.
I'm Outback ranch dressing. It has some of that white pepper in it.
Got a little spice to it. You're a Chipotle mayo. You're a Chipotle aioli.
Yeah, which is delightful. Those are good.
And the same color as sriracha, but you ain't sriracha. But there's so many other factors. Like, obviously the fans, right? And the fans in arenas that are going to be within, you know, possible physical distance of the players have to have a little extra screening. But they often, as you say, are generally not necessarily young, but they are generally well off white people that are sitting mm-hmm. courtside. But then even more than that, it's like when we think of the NBA, we often think of, okay, it's the owners / teams and the players. It is, but it is also the training staff. It is also the ushers. It is also the people that are selling popcorn, right? Mm-hmm. And so there is a huge group of people that are don't really get a say in this, but I hope that the NBA and the NBA Players Association are taking them into account, which is they are people that are probably more vulnerable, but they are also more beholden to this whole process. Like, you know, there are people at games that really, like, maybe it's not their entire living, but that really, like, make ends meet because yeah. they work games, whether mm-hmm. it's taking tickets or ushers or what have
you. It's the entertainment industry. Like, it's a branch of the entertainment industry.
They are probably, like, demographically, and if we're going to generalize, they're probably more at risk. But they're also probably more willing to take that risk because, like, if the games stop, they don't get paid. These are not people that are, you know, salaried people that have companies that may or may not be looking out for them, et cetera. Like, these are people that are using their game, the money that they make working games, right? And it's Kings those. And Clippers and Sparks and mm-hmm. Lakers that are reliant on this income. And I don't think you know, the PPP is coming back. I don't think the pandemic unemployment is coming back. So there are lots of moving parts to this, and there are lots of people to consider in all of this. And so I think the NBA is doing about as well of a good of a job as they can with this moving target all the time. And I think it makes sense to try to get guys back as quickly as possible. It's kind of, you know, splitting the difference. We've talked about before last week, I think we talked about, like, is there an appetite for just letting asymptomatic players play? That seems to both you and I, I don't want to speak for you, but I think I'm going to paraphrase at least for you. Yeah. I think that feels unsavory to both of us.
Mm-hmm. Although these protocols, and if they're going to cut back on testing, like, there are going to be cases that make their way onto the court.
Absolutely. But
like, that's how that's going to happen.
Absolutely. But let's be real about this. There were, I'm certain there were dozens of before the ramped up testing
We're talking about, more like,
sure. And that's, again, you and I both think that's kind of unsavory.
Yeah.
But this feels like, but I also think that, like, at some point, because I don't think this is going anywhere, we're going to have to figure out strategies to live with this. Now, therapeutics and antivirals and stuff are, you know, right on the way. So that's a part of it also. But as of right now, it feels like a pretty decent, like, half measure, at least, to say, like, if there's asymptomatic guys, we can get them back quicker. They don't have to sit out the full 10 days.
Yeah. No, I mean, there are no perfect solutions here. Otherwise, one would hope that if there was a perfect solution, we would have pulled the trigger on that a long time ago.
This is America, brother. I'm not convinced.
One would hope. That's why I said one would hope.
Yes.
I can hope, but, you know, hope is for the naive. And but so, like, I there is no perfect solution, and this is the best of a whole bunch of bad ones.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And that's where the league finds itself. That's where we, as a populace, not just American populace, but worldwide populace, find ourselves. We all have to make a whole bunch of judgment calls nowadays, based on what we're willing to risk and what we're willing to put at risk, and all of these things.
So are you ready for my my theory? We talked about this before, but I said I wouldn't tell you what it was because I wanted to get your organic reaction.
Yeah.
Are you ready for my theory? My Christmas Day theory. Well, first of all, the NBA is not postponing Christmas Day games. Like, just
no,
not happening.
Adam Silver after that, himself will play. Like, he'll hop out. Right. There.
What do you think Adam Silver can give you? I mean, against the other guys that are going to be playing that are at this point like G League scrubs.
The guy looks.
What do you
like
think Adam Silver?
The guy looks like a middle finger, man. Like, I'm worried about one screen.
You know what? You know what?
He does. Don't even say he doesn't.
R.I.P. David Stern. But David Stern would be like, we don't care about none of this. All y'all are playing.
Yeah. No, David Stern would have found the cure, or at least said, like, he would have given a whole bunch of plastic water bottles to teams with a label saying the cure on it, and then said, you guys are good. Get out there. You're set.
He would have had guys playing in those, like, outbreak suits. Like, I don't care. You may have it, but you playing. We need these ratings.
David Stern would be like, somebody's coughing just nonstop out there on the court, and all he would care about is that their shorts didn't go past their knees.
So my theory is, look, so let's just say, like, let's just put on the table right now that Christmas is not getting canceled, right?
Yeah.
Like, COVID is canceling Christmas, and in fact, it canceled my Christmas.
Oh man,
I'm sorry. I am not positive. Well, at least as of yesterday. But so let's get that out of the way, right? The NBA is going to play. They, like, their television partners. They basically have to. Mm-hmm. I don't know who we're gonna see on the court, but my theory is, as it relates to the Lakers specifically in the Lakers game, which is scheduled at least at this time at 5 o'clock, because the Nets have been just decimated by protocols, and some of the guys, although it looks like James is back and Paul Millsap is back, although Paul Millsap we can, like, set aside for this conversation. James is out of protocols now, even KD, who knows, Kyrie, who knows. LaMarcus, who knows? Everybody else on the Nets, who knows? My theory is that because the Lakers and Nets game is the game, the marquee game on Christmas, my working theory is that there's a likelihood that that gets moved back to the late night window a couple hours just to give more guys a chance to test out of protocols. Lakers guys, Nets guys, specifically Kevin Durant. But so my working theory is that it's likely the Lakers game gets moved to the late window, which I think was Denver and somebody. That is my working theory.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, they're going to do whatever they have to do to get the Lakers on national TV for that game.
And it is still, as I have no concept of what like basketball tickets actually cost, but I saw some tweets that the Lakers-Nets Christmas game is even still now far and away the most expensive game of the year. And I think I got that going back too. Several years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they need the Lakers logo out there. Like, it, you know, the Lakers logo generates views and ratings and stuff. Like, Steph does it now. But
it's Steph and LeBron, yes.
Yeah, but I think in general, the Lakers, even when the Lakers were bad, people watched those games.
Absolutely.
Like, even when the Lakers were, because people want to laugh
when
at
the
Lakers.
When they had the Wayne Ellington starting lineups that we're now seeing again.
Yeah.
What's Robert Sacre up to? Is he still doing
dunk
contests?
Can we go back to talking about eggnog?
Yes. Yes, we can. Eggnog is disgusting.
Let's get to the basketball. So it is the season of giving and all that. And I'm like, you can't see it, but off camera, my office, like Aaron, I'm telling you, I need a machete to get to my chair right now.
Because of all the presents?
Because of all the presents. It's just, aww, it's just obscene.
Are they all for Avery?
Oh yeah.
This is I love this.
Yeah. No, love I it. Just, I put love together, it. There's a little, I don't see, let me see if I can show you on the camera.
Yeah. I like this. Are we going to see the return of Avery Mountain?
Oh yeah.
But just in a different way.
Let's see if you can see it.
Panning.
There's Avery.
Oh yeah. There's Avery Mountain. Right. Yep. As I remember it. Oh, but Avery Mountain is covering. Oh, it's, yeah, you got a lot going on there.
Well, it's a little Jeep. It's a little.
Yeah, you got a lot going on there.
Yeah. So it's that season, and Avery is too young to have a wish list. But, you know, we know that there were certain things that she would have been happy to get. She would have been excited to get.
Yeah.
We are not too young to have wish lists. These NBA teams are, there are a lot of teams out there with a wish list. I would imagine number one on all of these teams' wish list is for COVID. Not even teams, everybody's wish list. COVID to go the fuck away. Like that's,
yes,
that is absolutely up there.
Yes.
Beyond that, though, there are, I do think, are some team-specific wish lists that we can, you know, kind of have a little bit of fun with. This is a Lakers adjacent show. So I'll go ahead and start it. And look, for me, what I would prefer for the Lakers is another couple wings and maybe a big.
Okay.
But based on how they've operated this year, I think they want more bucket getters. They want, let's see, if you can dribble and shoot off the dribble, that's what they're looking for.
Yes. let's put the COVID stuff aside.
Yeah.
So I am going to go. This is my wish list.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all right, kind of. This is my wish list as a basketball fan, right? As someone that works for a team and is roots for some teams more than others, let's say. Mm-hmm. We'll put that aside. But just as a basketball fan, my wish is for Western Conference injury rehab availability. I want to see what the West looks like with AD back,
yeah,
with Kawhi back,
Jamal Murray
back, and with Clay back.
Yeah,
I want health for those four guys specifically. If you want to put Michael Porter Jr. in there for Denver, also,
he's not, but okay. He's not like in that. He's not somebody who
he's
I wake
up. He's not on that tier. He's not on that tier.
He's not somebody who I wake up and say, "Man, I wish I could see the Western... Michael Porter Jr. today."
I want to see. Well, you know, I'm a West. Well, I'm a Michael Porter Jr. fan. I have a man crush on him, despite all the like weird
his podcast, Just Asking Questions.
Despite his interesting big brain take on certain
everything,
political, socioeconomic issues that I don't necessarily agree with.
Everything, yeah.
On the basketball court, as a basketball player, I have a man crush on Michael Porter Jr. Mm-hmm. I've been saying for like 3 years now that I think he could be a superstar. And I have Coach Pete and I, Laker Film Room, have argued about this a fair amount.
Mm-hmm.
I think Michael Porter Jr. has superstar potential and is going to lead the NBA in scoring at some or multiple points in his career. Pete basically says he's too dumb to be a superstar, and there are no like dumb. If you are not that smart, you can't be that good.
I'm on Team Pete on this one.
And that's not even about whatever his views on certain things are that I happen to disagree with. That is more of a just like in listening to the dude talk, he doesn't seem that bright.
Yeah.
I think he could be. Anyway.
And then watching him play, like him, watch him on defense, and it's an adventure.
Defense is not his strong suit as of yet. he has not figured out how to weaponize his 6'10 hyper athletic tools yet. and now he has had, I think, his second or third back surgery and is probably out for the year. So, sucks. But
do hope so he gets better. Do legitimately
if you don't, if you want to leave better. Him out, fine. But I would like to see the Western Conference heavyweights. My wish list for me is to see the health for the Western Conference heavyweights, because I am interested. I'm fascinated by how all of this shakes out, right? There was a credible discussion to have that Denver maybe was the best team in the league last year before Jamal Murray, after they got Aaron Gordon, with Jokic, with Murray, with MPJ.
Yeah.
You could definitely make a credible argument that they're going to win the whole thing. The Kawhi and Paul George stuff together, like there's a credible argument that they're going to win the whole thing. Now that we've seen what the Warriors look like without Klay, if you add Klay to that mix, if Klay looks like Klay, I think they're probably the favorites. But any team that has a like fully formed AD and LeBron, if they're healthy, you have to talk about also. So for me, what I want for Christmas on my basketball wish list is health for the Western Conference heavyweights.
Yeah, like that's first and foremost, you know, COVID aside, just everything. I just want, the NBA is so freaking talented, and it really sucks that it has been marred these last couple of years where this talent is really starting to, Giannis has taken that leap. Luka is I think mid-leap still. There's so many guys.
Luka's been so mediocre. Well, I mean, he's been good, but he's been so mediocre based on his standards.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think if there's a fair conversation, I mean, it's like we're still like 6 months away from it, maybe a year away from it. But are we sure Atlanta lost that trade? Because Trey has been flat out better than Luka this year.
Yeah.
And got Cam Reddish out of it.
So yeah.
He's been fine, whatever. He can't shoot, but.
I want to see, like, I'm giving Kidd a little bit of time before I really start harping on some of his approaches with Luka.
Right.
We saw that Luka with Carlisle was good for one of the greatest offenses. It was something you could jot down in pen heading into the season, that Carlisle coaching a team with Luka on it meant you were going to have one of a historic offense. Like that was just something you could just get ready for year in, year out. Kid shows up and it's not that. And so I don't know if we're going to, you know, I'm going to give Kid a little bit more time before I say, hey, that's the main variable difference there in that equation. But you know, I don't know how much time I'm going to give him. I just don't like a lot of the stuff that he's been, you know, focusing more on the mid range. And I just in general, I haven't really been a fan of the way that he's been coaching over there. But then also, like, the roster is flawed. You know, Kristaps Porzingis is bad. Like, he's not...
I mean, he's been better this year, but if he's your number two guy...
Yeah. And he's like, you know, he'll play well for, like, a couple weeks, and then he'll miss a couple weeks. You know, like, it's just... To a certain extent, and Trey is in a situation there in Atlanta where better coaches around him. We saw the difference.
Shout out my guy Nate McMillan.
Yeah, we saw the difference once Nate took over, and the, just like an immediate difference in how Atlanta was playing. Under
Lloyd Pierce.
Thank you. Dwayne Casey came to mind, but he's in Detroit.
All black people do not look the same.
Okay.
Dwayne Casey is in Detroit.
Eggnog is delicious.
Eggnog is not delicious. But eggnog does have powers to do similar things to when I say Hennessy is delicious.
So
Dwayne Casey is in Detroit after being sort of unceremoniously removed from Toronto.
Yeah. But like, you know, I just think, again, like, when we were doing this before with the Luka Trey trade, right?
And
we
by the way,
saying,
I think Lloyd Pierce has been the interim coach in Indiana now that that Rick Carlisle, who we just mentioned, has been in protocols, unfortunately. Yeah.
So before, like when Carlisle was coaching in Dallas, the trade looked laughable there for a while because Lloyd Pierce was in
Atlanta,
and he wasn't using Trey the way that Trey wanted to be used. And that team wasn't being optimized. And then you have McMillan take over, and holy crap, Trey looks way better. And then
also with the development of John Collins, et cetera.
Yeah. Yes. And then, you know, the opposite of that happens in Dallas, where you had a coach who was putting Luka in better situations and putting that entire team in better situations. Then Kidd takes over and you say, oh my God, look, it just, Jalen Rose says it all the time. You become the player based on the situation that you're drafted into.
Yes, and context some guys, matters.
Yeah, so it's like some guys are just great enough to make up for it and to mask all that stuff. But even those guys need a little bit of help, you know.
Absolutely.
So if we're talking about like the Trey and the, I thought it was stupid when we were saying it was laughable before because I thought Trey had great talent. I think. Like anybody who was saying that it's laughable the other way, I'm saying like, how aren't we noticing the differences in these situations? Shout to Jason Kidd though. Somebody, I think the Lakers legitimately miss Jason Kidd though. I will say that
the Lakers absolutely miss Jason Kidd.
Yeah, I really do. I think having a former great player telling current great players, hey, you guys gotta, you know,
yes.
You really have to focus here, or you really have to work your ass off here. You guys are not working your like. There was value to that with this specific Lakers roster. And I do think they miss him there, but I don't think he's the coach for Luka. Is that
Hennessy
fair?
Is delicious, and as is Sincoro, which I'm drinking now. The Lakers do miss Jason Kidd because he was, as you just talked about, he was somebody that had the ear of and. It was one of the guys that could tug on Superman's cape.
Yeah.
And not just LeBron, but like all other guys.
Them. Yeah.
AD. He had their respect because he had done it before. And Vogel and Fizdale and Handy have those guys' respect. However, none of them are as accomplished as players. LeBron, as Russ, as AD, etc.
Shoot, none of those guys are as accomplished as players as Malik Monk. So
that's probably right. Yeah. Phil can hoop though. Phil can hoop. Phil can still hoop. Actually.
Oh man, no. I watch him warm up and stuff like that. How old? Because Phil's how old?
I don't know. He's about my age.
Oh, I thought he was older.
No, I think he's in his like. The internet has the answer to this. I think he's in his mid 40s.
Yeah, I'll look that up really quick. But
I'm checking now.
I also don't think it's necessary. He's 50 years old, so I don't think it's necessarily. By the way, like the fact that Phil can hoop, I don't think it's a coincidence that he, if Vogel was let go, would get. Some loud voices kind of speaking up for him.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. All right. So let's go ahead and the wish list here beyond injuries, beyond COVID, let's actually get to a couple like type of teams that maybe need a type of player. not a specific player, but or even fan bases. Like, do you have any idea on things that fan bases or teams or a player might be asking for come Christmas time?
Yeah, so I'm going to go with...
Or holiday time, depending on...
I'm going to go with the Utah Jazz.
Okay.
And their fan base and their obsession with telling us that Rudy Gobert is... I hope for them. I hope for the Utah fan base, the Jazz fan base, that there are enough perimeter defenders... So they can actually say once and for all, if Rudy Gobert can hold up on the defensive end in the postseason. Rudy Gobert gets a lot of grief because there are definitely highlights of Steph turning him into a pretzel on switches. There are a lot of highlights of Terrence Mann just draining all sorts of... Terrence Mann basically turning into Steph Curry as Rudy Gobert flails around and runs out. What Jazz fans will tell you, and your former boss will tell everyone, is that we're being completely unfair to Rudy. He's actually okay on the perimeter by himself. And the real problem is that Rudy has to cover up for so many other perimeter defense deficiencies on the roster that it's not really on Rudy.
Yeah.
I don't know that Utah... Look, Utah's not winning the title. But I would like to... see, like, once and for all, let's get a referendum on Rudy Gobert on the perimeter as a switch defender and as a guy who doesn't have to chase everything because the rest of his teammates are... And I think that's stylistic. I think that's a choice that Utah has made, that the Jazz have made. I think they think that we got Rudy.
Yeah, it's much like the Lakers with AD, LeBron, Frank.
Yes. And the Warriors offensively with Steph until this year. So I would like to see, for Jazz fans, just competent perimeter defense. So we can see, can Rudy really hang on the perimeter?
Yeah.
Is Rudy still defensively? Can Utah be as good defensively as they generally are in the regular season, in the postseason? We need answers.
I've always thought with Rudy... that his problems, like the reason he gets played off of the court in the playoffs is, one, the caliber of players who are putting him in isolation goes way up in the postseason compared to the regular season. Like, I always hear...
It's different when it's James and Steph.
Yeah, like I always hear... Yeah. you're like, you know, David and some of the other people who cover or root for that team... always point to like ISO stats in the regular season and how, look how well he handles this. And I'm like, yeah, but that's when Malik Monk gets really excited and goes at it. Yeah. Like if Dante DiVincenzo gets a little reckless and he goes at Rudy Gobert, it's not going to go very well, you know? That's funny. But like in the postseason, that guy turns into some of the best ISO players that the game has ever seen. And that's where, you can't, that's an apples to oranges comparison, regular season to postseason. The other thing too, in the postseason with Rudy Gobert is that he isn't good enough offensively to take advantage of teams when they go small against him. So like when the Clippers went super duper small and he was getting the ball in the middle of the paint, he wasn't doing anything with it. And so,
yeah, but there's a question of that just like on its face, if that is efficient offense. Like post-ups, unless you are an elite post-up player, post-ups just aren't efficient offense.
No, I don't even mean like, I mean like every time he touched the ball in the paint, it was not like if he caught it, if he catches it on the roll, he's generally pretty good. Yeah. If he's close enough to the basket at dunking, he's so big that like it's, if he gets deep enough,
he is a large human.
Yeah. But like if he catches the ball a dribble away from the rim on the roll, good luck. It's probably not going to go very well. And so like if he gets a immediately close to the rim type of rebound, if he gets that kind of board, again, he's fine at going back up because he's so big and finishing there. But if he catches the ball again in that same kind of one dribble away or a spot where he has to throw up a jump hook, Like, that's where I say, yeah, I can live with that. And there you're not taking advantage of the reasons that the team is willing to gamble because they don't think you could take advantage of them in that regard.
So let me be fair. I'm in the, I don't know about this camp mm-hmm. as it relates to Rudy in the playoffs, but I want to see it more and I want to see yeah. it with more of the variables taken away, with more of the excuses, you could say, taken away. As it relates to his offense in the playoffs, he does need to punish smaller lineups and switches more. I think the Jazz are making a mistake if they try to do that through posting him up and feeding him the ball. I'd rather Conley, Ingles, who hasn't been any good this year, but Ingles, Donovan Mitchell initiating that offense and going into the blender and getting Royce O'Neal wide open jumpers and getting Donovan jump, right, all of that. I think if you, even against a small guy, whether it's on a switch or just against a very small lineup, I think you are playing into the defense's hands if you're trying to post Rudy. What he hasn't done enough of offensively for me in the playoffs specifically is destroy small matchups or small teams on the offensive glass. And I think that the discourse around it, at least on Twitter, which is not a real place, is very one side or the other as topics and discussions seem to be on Twitter. So I would like to remove as much of those variables and excuses and whatever that we can and actually get a look at it. Yeah. I don't think the Jazz are going to win anything because I'm not a believer in it, but I would like to see it. So for the Jazz fans, I hope for enough perimeter defense so we can really see if Rudy, the only thing he can do is be a defensive monster in the regular season and get us some ethereal screen assist stats.
All right, my wish list here, and I'm going to keep it quick because we've talked about these guys a lot. I want to see Ben Simmons traded, and I want some outcome to the Dame situation, whether it's trading CJ McCollum, getting more help around him, or moving. Oh, Trevor Ariza just mm-hmm. entered health and safety protocols.
Yeah.
All right. So. Oh, man, yeah, this team. I need another eggnog. Like
it is seven, not. No. Seven more. I know. When you say this team, it is because you care with your entire heart and mm-hmm. you root and. But it's not this team. It's the league.
No,
it's the
country.
It's the world.
I meant like this season for this team has just been brutal. Like Trevor Ariza played really well the other night. Like
he did,
and he's been like the breath of fresh air that the Lakers have kind of promised that he was going to be. And then immediately it's taken away from you. It's just this season it has been brutal for the Lakers.
Yes.
And everybody. But you know, I root harder for the Lakers than I do the Utah Jazz.
You don't root harder for the Lakers. You root only for the Lakers.
Well, I don't know if that's... I'm an NBA fan. Like I
sure,
do
but
deeply,
you root
deeply...
only for... Yes, you love the NBA, but well, you but root like, only for the Lakers.
Well, no. So like I root for whoever is playing the Celtics.
Fair.
You know,
fair. By the way, shout out ISO Joe for getting a bucket last night for the Celtics. Yeah. Even though we all hate the color green and the Celtics,
mm-hmm.
shout out ISO Joe for getting a bucket at my age.
I was hoping that we would find out that he signed like the most expensive 10-day contract ever. That he made like $1 more than everybody else who has ever signed a 10-day.
I mean.
He might have, right?
I think he probably did. I don't know this to be true, but like minimum contracts are based on service time.
Mm-hmm.
And so if 10-day contracts are also based on service time, I don't think anybody has ever signed a 10-day after that many years in the league. So maybe he did.
Yeah.
We're saying he did.
Yeah. Let's
Shout
go,
out
Joe.
ISO Joe getting the bag on the 10-day.
ISO Joe, where the S is the dollar sign. Like that's my dude.
Right. ISO Joe got like 15 million for a 10-day just because he's been in the league 40 years.
All right. Naughty or nice. We'll do now. You know what? We're good. We did the wish list thing and
story
we're
time?
At 50 minutes. Let's jump into holiday story time. And you said you have a couple here. Let's go to just, all right, let's, you know what?
I'll make them quick.
Let's have some fun.
I'll make them quick. So the first one, well, actually, how about this? Do you want the like sort of sad one or the sort of happy one first?
Let's do only the sort of happy one. Like, okay. let's try to like get people smiling on their way out.
Well, no, I mean, they're both kind of like, all right, you know what? Let me do the sort of sad one. A couple years ago, I grew up in San Francisco. So the Lakers, LeBron's first year, Lakers play at the Warriors. And we had a couple days off before, but waited to fly in on Christmas Eve because the team, rightfully so, the Lakers, wanted to give guys as much time as possible with their family. So we left LA later than normal, flying to San Francisco. We get to the hotel at like, oh, maybe 8 o'clock at night. Normally we would fly early during the day before, and then, you know, have more time in wherever. So we get to the hotel. It's probably, I don't know, 8:30, 9 o'clock. You go up to your room, come down. I talked last week about what that process is like. And I come down and decide I'm going to have a beverage at the bar at the hotel. Hotel bars are my favorite place on planet Earth, followed shortly by airport bars. So I'm drinking with a couple of the guys.
Yeah.
And now it's like 11 something. The bar's closing down. This is Christmas Eve. And I go back up to my room, which I haven't touched yet. I haven't done anything. I haven't gotten a shower, haven't gotten on the bed. There's my bag is sitting there. And it's like 11:30. And I say, it's Christmas Eve. I'm alone and I'm in my hometown. I grew up in the city of San Francisco. I'm in my hometown. I have never been more lonely in my entire life. So I hop in, I grab an Uber and go home for Christmas. So I spent that Christmas as it turned in from Christmas Eve to Christmas in an Uber on my way home because it was, if you ever on a holiday on Christmas or any other holiday, if you are in your hometown, go home. Don't spend it in the hotel. It was literally the loneliest I've ever been in my life, but I'm happy I went home and I went into my old room and slept with the door open because my mom didn't know I was coming home. I mean, she knew I was in town, but she didn't know I was going to come home. And so my mom came down and got very emotional when my door was open and saw me sleeping in the room. So it has a happy ending.
Hell yeah.
All right. So the other one is, this is 2010 or 2011. I'm in, I'm working for the Blazers at the time. And we had a game the night after Thanksgiving. So Thanksgiving night, I am still, I don't know if he's going to love me telling this story, but so be it. Joel Prisbilla and I have talked about him on the show before. He and I are still like very, very close friends. And he and I were obviously really close back in Portland. And so we go to my father and mother, my wife at the time. Yeah, my wife at the time, her family's house, her parents' house, which is pretty close to the Blazers practice facility. And so Joel and I we just start having a few beverages. I am really good at drinking. He's a 7'1", 255-pound, 265-pound professional athlete, so he can obviously drink pretty good. And he and I, he enjoyed him some Coors Lights. He was a Coors Light fan. And then I think he liked vodka cranberry or something, and Jaeger bombs. So he and I just start drinking because we're
both of those things just made me shudder.
He and I are like just kind of, to be honest, we're just kind of like, we don't want to participate in all the like festivities. He and I just want to do whatever. So he and I are just like just drinking all night. And he and I get pretty drunk, like pretty good and drunk. And I'm like, what are we doing tomorrow? Because there's the Blazers have a game tomorrow. And he's like, I don't know, man. Like, I'm not going to play tomorrow. I'm not going to play tomorrow.
Like symptoms. Yeah.
I'm just not going to play tomorrow. Sadie and I get real drunk. So I would get to the game, you know, for like a 7:30 game, I would get to what used to be called the Rose Garden. Now it's called the Moda Center. Shout out to crypto.com arena, which is
it needs to still be the Rose Garden.
I agree, because that wasn't like a corporate thing. It was just for whatever reason, Portland's called the Rose City.
Yeah.
So I get to the arena at like 4 o'clock, maybe 4:30 for a 7 or 7:30 game the next day. And I think Joel was already there. Sometimes I would ride with him, sometimes not, depending on what we had going. And so he comes out for warmups, get his work in before shoot around or whatever before the game. And I look at him and I go, you do not look good. I told him, I go, you look like how I feel.
Yeah.
And he's like, fuck, man, I'm not in good shape. I go, don't worry about it.
Do you get your hangovers in your head or your stomach?
I don't get hangovers, which is like strange. I just like,
the amount of contempt that I just
I don't get
shot
hangovers.
At you.
I don't, So sometimes the only, like, I know a lot of people get like nauseous or
that's me.
Have sensitivity to light or sounds or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel the worst that it ever gets for me is like, I just feel like kind of sluggish, but mm-hmm. I'm fine. So I felt it was like 4 o'clock the next afternoon. And that tells you how much we drank. I was still kind of like sluggish, but fine. And he did not look good either. And the dude probably had like a couple cases of beers and some vodka cranberries and maybe a Jaeger bomb or two. Oof. And I drank, I don't know, a handful of beers and maybe a bottle, probably at least a bottle of Crown. Anyway, it was fun for him because, right, like his wife is there, my wife is there, my wife's parents, our whole family there. So like everybody can hang out with his kid. Like, and so mm-hmm. me and him were just whatever. And my ex-father-in-law, you know, wanted to be part of the group too. So he would have one here and there, you know.
Yeah.
He's breaking out the good wine.
Ooh.
So I see him at the game and he's just like,
hey, up in Portland, there's Willamette Valley is like some of the best pinots that you can have.
There's good wine and beer there, the little microbreweries.
Mm-hmm.
I hate Portland. So he goes like, all right. I'm like, well, you don't have to play at least, right? And he goes, no, I'm good. And I'm like, and he's just like going through the motions before the game and it's not going well.
Yeah.
He goes back to the locker room. I go do all my other stuff, do whatever. He comes back out like for pregame, right? And, you know, layup lines and announcements. And I look at the thing and he's starting. I go, what the fuck? What? What are you doing?
He's hoping to sweat it out.
You can't play. What are you doing?
He's going to smell like Coors.
And he goes, and so we had at the time, we also had Greg Oden and Marcus Camby and LaMarcus. So LaMarcus was going to play. Oden was not. And Marcus Camby, like when he was in Denver, Marcus Camby and the other, I think it was Nene, and they had one other center. They would mm-hmm. literally like before JaVale. Games draw stop. Yeah, maybe it was JaVale. They would like draw straws.
Or Birdman.
See who got to sit out. Maybe both. They would literally like, okay, like I don't have to play today. They would literally like compete over who didn't have to play.
Mm-hmm.
And so Joel went in and was like, whatever. And Marcus was like, I'm not playing today. So Joel had to start and play a bunch of minutes and finish with like 24 rebounds, like 10 points and 24 rebounds or something, 20 something rebounds. Completely like a dragging hungover in an NBA game, sweating out Jaeger bombs the day after Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving.
He came after the game. He came up and was like, I guess you and I need to get drunk the night before games more often. Look at you on the glass. He's like, I feel like shit.
I wonder if it's like I'm in such a bad mood because I'm playing in this kind of state of mind that I may as well just play my ass off and I'm gonna get super angry. I'm like, nobody's gonna be able to move me because I can't move myself and I'm just gonna grab a whole bunch of rebounds.
Joel is a big boy.
Yeah.
I mean, even by NBA standards, he's a big boy.
Yep. Yeah, that dude was a bruiser. All right.
So that was the time Joel and I got so drunk on Thanksgiving. The next night he had 22 rebounds or 24 rebounds or something like that.
I feel like Thanksgiving is a bigger drinking holiday than Christmas, right? Like, I feel that's...
Yeah, but isn't it... I think it's the night before, right? Blackout Wednesday, like they used to call
that,
it.
That whole week is
just because, like, nobody's got to work and everybody's irritated that they're going to have to be sitting around with their family, so everybody gets touched up.
I'm not a fan of Christmas falling on a Saturday. New Year's I'm fine with. New Year's falling on a Saturday is like that's more okay.
But. As it relates to the NBA, you know why it's not good? Because the NFL is like, nah, you guys don't get Christmas to yourselves. We're playing.
Yeah.
So they're playing, I think there's three games on Saturday on Christmas, and then next year it's a Sunday, so there'll be all the games. Like, that's harder for the NFL to try to stake a claim on Christmas when it's a Wednesday, but yeah. On a weekend, the NFL is like, nah, we're also... So part of the reasons the NBA ratings may suffer on Christmas is because it's going to be the G League showcase, but that's not the only reason. The NFL is also right there.
It's king. Yeah, it moved... the TNT games to Tuesdays. All right, that's going to do it for this episode and this week's episodes of the Silver Screen and Roll podcast. I am heading off into the holiday weekend and spending as much time as I possibly can now that Avery kind of understands the concept of Christmas. I'm going to send you this video, dude. Please do. She blew out the Christmas tree. Like, she sang happy birthday to...
When you said blew out the Christmas tree, I was like, did you guys attach too much and your power grid like a birthday cake. She blew
out. So like I had the app open to be able to turn off the Christmas tree as soon as she like blew onto it. And so she turned around, she's like, I did it. It was great. Aww. It's pretty fantastic. So
also wait, let me give a quick shout out Dwight, for those in LA, Dwight, and I think it's Grand Champions, Dwight's Foundation. We did a thing, like a holiday toy thing giveaway for kids yesterday on Wednesday, and there's another one on Sunday in LA. So shout out for everybody who is like it, Dwight, but whoever. Shout out to everybody that is taking care of some kids and trying to give some less fortunate people some help here in the holiday season.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's what this season is all about. Absolutely. That's going to do it, though. Hope you guys have a nice, safe holiday, whatever it is you're celebrating, whoever it is that you're celebrating with. And we will be back on Monday to hopefully have a little more happy stuff to talk about regarding you.